Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another one of our Jacksonville Jaguars fan forums. My name is Joe Fortunato. Happy to be with you here tonight. Of course, if you've been involved in these before, you kind of know the drill. I'll tell you how to get your questions in and how to talk to some of our representatives. But tonight we've got a great show. We've got General Manager Gene Smith in tonight. You'll be able to ask Gene questions. But before we get started, I do want to let you know how you can do that and also how you can maybe get some info on season tickets. If you'd like to ask a question of Gene, real easy. Just hit *3 on your telephone, *3. That'll put you through to one of our screeners, and Steve, Scott, or Jeff, they'll take real good care of you. And when you're done with your question, just stay on the line. You'll be transferred right back to the forum. Also, if you'd like to transfer at any time during the show to speak to any of our representatives about renewing your season tickets or maybe adding seats or upgrading seats or any other questions you may have relating to your season tickets or your account, just hit *0. And once again, when you're done talking to a ticket representative, you'll be put right back in the forum so you won't miss a thing. Now, to get things going, boy, it's my pleasure to bring you the man who's called every snap for 15 seasons.
16.
16 seasons. Thank you. You knew that. The voice of the Jaguars.
Thanks, Joe.
Brian Sexton.
I guess this is like doing a radio show, except no commercial breaks, right?
How about this is commercial free for an hour. You got you. We've got the GM. Season ticket holders. Doesn't get better than this.
All right. So away we go, folks. And say again, how does someone get a question going?
Okay. If you want to ask a question, right on your phone, *3.
*3. Okay. Here we go, folks. *3. How are you, Gene?
Great.
Pleasure to be with you this evening, the Jaguars general manager. Oh, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, it's an honor for me to be here with all the season ticket holders. I truly appreciate their support.
You have been a very busy guy, and I'm guessing it's going to just ramp up from here over the next 6 weeks as you get up towards the draft. Is that an accurate depiction?
It intensifies, yes. We're in what I call the playoff run for player personnel. Once the Super Bowl is over, the scouts come in for about a two-week window before the draft. We stack our draft board based on the scouting opinions of how players performed under padded conditions. And certainly when we go to the combine, we're trying to get more information, medical, psychological interviews, and getting some verified measurables and times that certainly we want to get on all the players, especially the underclassmen. So there's a lot going on this time of the year as we're leading up to the draft.
This is first and foremost to everyone on the call this evening going to be a football conversation. But let's deal with the front and center, the news of the day. And a lot of people are probably going to want to know what you think about this collective bargaining labor agreement conversation that's going on in D.C. The latest is that the head of the union, DeMaurice Smith, is promising his players an update by 2 o'clock tomorrow. And obviously people who are listening understand that tomorrow night is another deadline. Have you paid much attention to that? Are you involved in it at all? Or is it business as usual to some degree for you? You don't have free agency yet.
Well, it's business as usual regarding the draft. Obviously, I have to monitor that situation because once a deal is done, pro free agency is going to start, and we will be active in that area. Certainly, we need to be active in that area because if you look at our 2008 draft, you look at some of the first-round selections prior to that, we've got some area that we need to upgrade in this football team on the defensive side in particular, and I'd like to get a couple of veterans for sure in here that can assist in that manner.
All right, so to everyone who's listening, you are following the proceedings. You're ready to go as soon as they reach an agreement, but you're not involved in it. You are a football guy.
No, that's not my defined role. There's some smart people on both sides trying to work out a deal. I feel like in the end, between the two extremes, there's good judgment and common sense, and hopefully that will prevail.
All right, so with that framework, folks, let's talk football this evening. And let's start. You mentioned the defensive side of the football first, some areas to work. Should people infer then that you are pleased with where the offensive side of the ball finished last season with offensive coordinator Dirk Koetter?
I am, because I know there's some players that are going to be coming back into the fold on offense that, you know, were injured, the Eben Britton, you know, the Jarrett Dillard. And we got some young players that are, I think, starting to emerge. And with the acquisition of Jason Hill, he brought speed and quickness. He was a guy we did like coming out of college. And we saw things in him at practice, not just in his limited play opportunities this past season for us. And then certainly Mike Thomas became a clutch, a go-to type receiver. Mercedes goes to Pro Bowl. Zach Miller will certainly be more involved this year. He is a playmaker. And then you have probably the best blocking fullback in the league and an all-pro running back, an experienced quarterback, and an offensive line, I think, that when healthy, has a chance to be a good one. So I'm very encouraged on the offensive side. But, again, defensively, we have to get more playmaking across the board.
All right, folks, you know Star 3 allows you to ask a question this evening. If I give you the phone number, forget it. That's just the old radio in me, too many times in the studio. Star 3, let's start with Kevin, who wants to know if you've thought about Rasheen Mathis playing safety. He did at Bethune-Cookman, had 31 interceptions before coming to the NFL, started his career, I think played the first half of the 03 season in the free safety role, then moved to corner and, of course, has been a Pro Bowler. Any thoughts about what Rasheen might offer as a safety?
Well, it's an excellent question and an excellent thought. Rod Woodson did it at the back end of his career. I think that could definitely be a consideration. Certainly, as a free safety, he had tremendous range when he did play safety, and he's a ball hawk. You know, the ball tends to find him, and you know, that's rare at that position to have that innate ability, just like in basketball, to know where the ball is coming off the rim. And everyone knows Dennis Rodman, when he's with the Pistons, he's a 6'4" forward that was one of the best rebounders in the NBA for a number of years.
And when you look at Rasheen, I mean, he's a guy who plays corner. He's got a lot of pride. I mean, I would guess that he would like to stay in that role. Is that accurate, do you think, that he isn't ready to make that shift over there? Doesn't think he's at the end of his career like Rod is?
Right, I think Rasheen showed the last four games of the year that he still has the ability to play corner in the NFL. But I think at some point it is a good consideration to possibly move into the safety position. I think when you have a player that had rare speed coming out, he still does have good speed, and then you have a player that has the instinctual ability to play the position, even if they lose a step, sometimes that instinctual ability allows you to anticipate things and still play fast enough to where you can play what I call winning football, productive football. So I feel like he still has corner in him, but ultimately he may make that transition.
While we're there, let's talk about Derek Cox on the other side. Yeah, well chronicled last year, started slow, spent some time on the sideline, got back into the game. How did you grade his 2010 season, especially how did he finish?
Well, he started slow, and then he came on as the year progressed. He's talented. I mean, he's got all the tools to be a very good player, and he shows spurts of some tremendous play. I think with him and Rasheen, I know Mel has talked about being more aggressive in coverage and maybe doing some more things along the line of press or playing closer to the receiver in different situations. I think that'll play to both of their strengths. They're longer corners that can disrupt receivers on their releases and certainly, I think, benefit from that scheme adjustment.
All right, folks, Star 3, if you've got a thought, we'll move it right on in. Let's talk to Jeremy. Well, I'm sorry, we're not talking to Jeremy. We're going to read Jeremy's question. He wants your thoughts on an 18-game season, and I don't know if we've asked you about that on the radio or on TV. Have you given it a perspective yet on what 18 games would mean for a football team?
I have. Certainly, I call them the real games. So you'd have two preseason games, and you'd have starters certainly playing the core of those games, and that would limit the opportunity for younger players to be evaluated. So what would have to occur is you'd have to not only work probably against one team, but maybe two teams, to where you'd have a practice or two the day or two before you actually played the preseason game. So you'd have more of a padded exposure opportunity as scouts to evaluate the talent on your roster so you could accurately cut down your team to a 53-man.
You know, I asked Jeff Loggeman last night on Jaguars This Week here in Jacksonville if he thought that going to an 18-game schedule and two preseason games might make it harder for younger players to make an impression and make the roster. He didn't really think so. He thought you guys had enough time to evaluate and know going into camp what guys were about. Do you see it as being a shortcoming for younger players and more of a benefit to veteran players?
It would be a shortcoming if you don't do something different from what you did in the past in terms of getting enough padded exposures. Like I said, if you would work against two teams, and do, you know, some practice work before you actually play the preseason game, I think you could get enough exposure to get a feel for your roster.
All right, folks. Star 3, great question, Jeremy. And let's talk about Vernon's question. He wants to know any moves in free agency. You touched on that opening, talking about some of the disappointments from before 2008, and it left you there. Have you, at this point, you said you're ready to go, you've got your board ready to go, you're going to be active in free agency?
We are. We're going to try to get some veteran presence down the middle of our defense. I think it's much needed. Certainly, when you look at offense, you know, the leadership position, the offensive line is your center, and certainly for the skill position, it's quarterback. On defense, it's your middle linebacker, and it's your free safety. So we need to get more plays down the middle, and that will be an area that we'll try to address at the second level and the third level of our defense. We still have to get better up front, too, now. We have some youth there, but we have to be able to create more rush off the edge in terms of getting the quarterback down. And I think if we're able to still get value in the draft and match needs, there are some good defensive players that will assist, but we do have to work with pro free agency this year.
All right, moving along. Let's talk about TK. He wants to know if you have any interest in Mark Ingram. And, folks, you got to know that you're not going to get what the real interest is. The smoke signals are all over the place. But your thoughts on Mark Ingram and the way that he's shown over the last couple of, I think he ran pretty well at a pro day at Alabama, didn't he?
He ran better at the pro day than at the combine. I don't get caught up in speed for a running back. It's really guys who can get yards on their own or balance after first contact, and that's what he has. I know some people have compared him to Emmitt Smith. I think that's a good comparison.
Wow.
He's got
double wow. That's a huge comparison.
That's right. He's got a good running base. He's certainly got good vision, instinct, and awareness with the ball in his hand. And I think, you know, he'll have a very productive NFL career, you know, barring injury.
We've got Bob who wants to know your thoughts on Bob Sanders and why he signed in San Diego.
Well, I think it was a situation where when he got out onto the market, he probably had higher expectations as to what may happen. He made multiple visits. I was fortunate that we got him in here right before we had to go to the combine and had a very good visit. And, you know, as things played out, there were things that we were kind of waiting to see develop. And so for us, it was more initially getting the medical. And I think with San Diego, they had a situation where they have a safety that's a guy they're not sure what's going to happen, Eric Weddle. And so they felt like, you know, this is a chance to get a player that's played 9 games in 3 years and see if he can help solidify that position if, in fact, they aren't able to keep Eric Weddle there.
Do you grade a free agent like you would a college kid coming out, you know, put a value to him somewhere, and you don't really veer off your value board on draft day? So I would assume that it's very similar with free agency. You decide what his value is and what you'll pay, and if the market's too high, you move on.
That's right. I think you have to do a good job of setting the right market value for a player through your evaluations. Okay, it doesn't matter how much money you have, you know, from a team standpoint, it's making the right evaluation, because you certainly don't want to spend our money. We want to invest it in guys who can help us win, but you have to stay to your system, and that's what we'll do here.
Sometimes you, I don't mean you in particular, but a personnel guy, a coach, can get emotional about a player and decide that's the guy. You really have to fight that off in every instance, don't you, draft and free agency?
Brian, that's a tremendous point. You cannot have your decisions being emotionally driven. That's where you can get into a lot of problems. Again, just like with the draft, you stay with your board. I certainly feel like in pro free agency, you have to do the same thing.
We've got Joey, who wants to know your thoughts on the kid down the road there on I-10 at Florida State, Christian Ponder, who I think is really starting to get a little traction.
Yeah, he did a nice job at the Senior Bowl and certainly at the Combine. He's got the right makeup. I mean, he's one of, a good group, really, of quarterbacks this year. There's a number of those guys who end up being eventual starters in the NFL.
We heard, not just last year, but the year before, that the 2011 draft would be a deep crop of quarterbacks. As we are now 6 weeks away, you've had a lot of different opportunities to evaluate. Is it as good as they thought, or is it maybe not as high at the top end?
Oh, I think it's probably as good as what scouts thought.
Okay.
I think sometimes people focus on just the first round because I think the media does. When you see mock drafts, you typically see the first round. There's positions that are good at certain ranges within the draft. May not be the first round, but for a scout, he's looking at that third, fourth round or that fourth, fifth round, depending on the position, and thinking, boy, this is a good round to get value at a position. And so I think, again, people lock into the first round too much.
Stay on the draft for just a moment, and we've got Dane in Fort Walton Beach who wants to know, overall, is this a deep draft? First of all, can you define deep for us as it relates to an NFL draft? And after that, is this one?
Well, it's deep in the offensive and defensive line.
That's a good place to be deep, isn't it?
It is. If you're a believer in building inside out, and I certainly am. So I would say from that standpoint it is. And then, I like to say that it's a good draft if you draft well. What we need to do is try to get seven right. We don't need to get 256 players right. We've got to get seven right, the ones we take, and hopefully we're able to acquire more picks on draft day because right now we have seven. We don't have a seventh rounder, but we do have two in the fourth round.
All right, moving right along, we've got Bill from Orange Park, and he questions offensive line help. Will that be an area that you approach this year?
Well, I'd definitely like to get an offensive lineman, a versatile offensive lineman. So I think that's a valid recommendation because I agree with it.
Draft or free agency or either?
Probably more the draft. Free agency, it's kind of like the draft. It changes year to year as to the positional strength. So I think that's probably a greater chance in the draft.
We got a big question, a good question last night from a big Jaguar fan who wanted to talk about John Estes, who's a guy who you had as an undrafted rookie from Hawaii, got injured late in camp, spent the year on injured reserve. Thoughts on him and how his progression is and whether or not he's got a future?
I think he does have a future. He's a guy that I believe started every game at Hawaii. And Vince Manoway has done a good job for us through the years out of that program. John's a guy that is a natural at the position. By that I mean he plays with a good base. He plays with good knee bend. He plays with quick hands. He's always working to replace his hands to keep them inside on the defender, and that's something that Brad Meester did from day one. He was an excellent hands player. And then he's aware like Brad. So everything that we evaluated up to his injury was good. The arrow was certainly up, and I feel like he's fully recovered and will be a guy that will be competing to make our team and in time, hopefully competing for play time.
Anybody else in the offensive line group not the starters, but in that group behind them that has an arrow up that you're excited about?
Yeah, I mean, Guy Wimper came in here. He played good against the Giants up until the last series of the game. He's a swing tackle. And then Kevin Haslam did a nice job. And
man from
Daniel Baldridge, yeah. The two undrafted guys that by the end of the year, they were both on our 53. But I think they both have ascending ability. Certainly aren't where they want to be yet.
Right.
But I'm encouraged.
Well, and Haslam in particular is a guy who can play tackle and guard, right?
He has, yes.
And then you've got a big guy in Baldinger. Baldinger?
Baldridge.
Baldridge. I don't know why I'm thinking that. Too much NFL Network in the combine here. Let's grab Donnie. Donnie wants to know what you think about Patrick Peterson, and I'm sure it's going to be a glowing recommendation on the corner from LSU.
Well, arguably the best corner in the draft. I think him and, Prince out at Nebraska are two outstanding corners that can cover. The one thing about this guy, he certainly can run support, and he's got tremendous special team value. He's built like a Will linebacker, but he runs like a corner. So he clearly has a chance to come in and make an immediate impact for his drafting team.
Would it be an upset, a shock to you, if a cornerback gets drafted number one overall in a year that there are defensive linemen and quarterbacks up there?
Well,
you don't see that many corners go number one overall.
Right. I think that's a good question, Brian. The one thing I know about the NFL, nothing would shock me in the draft in particular. There's just a level of unknown when you go into draft day. Just when you think you know everything, you learn something new. And I've certainly been through it on draft day where things have played out maybe a little bit differently than what we have anticipated. But if you just stay to your system, I think regardless of what happens, it'll bring good results.
I've just heard that he's a guy that has as good a chance to be a top pick that produces at a high level immediately as any player at the top of the draft.
Well, it's a premium position, so certainly that could happen. I mean, when you talk about a left corner, you talk about a right end on defense, and on offense, you talk about the quarterback and the left tackle. I don't think there's any question for what that position is going to pay, being number one overall, that it could be him in the end. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility.
Chad wants to know if any rules regarding the draft change if there is a lockout. Is this the same draft as we've seen in years prior, or is there anything different?
There's a couple things different. You know, you can't trade a player contract. And then the other thing is, once the final selection's made on Saturday night, there'll be no undrafted college free agency. So there are a couple differences, but I'd like to think that a deal is going to be worked out, and it's going to be normal as to how we've drafted in the past.
Scott wants to know what you think of Steve Ringholtz of Monroeville, which I believe is your hometown.
It is my hometown, next to my dad. You know, he's had the greatest influence on my life.
Is this your high school football coach?
It is.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's a great man. He's fought through a lot of adversity with losing his wife to cancer, and then certainly I've lost my parents. And he's through the years been someone that I've leaned on, and he's certainly been a great mentor to me.
Great question. We certainly appreciate that. Lucas wants to know what round you pick a quarterback in. See if we can stump you.
Well, I would say in the round where the player's there when we're picking. A lot of times you'd like to take him in a certain spot and he might be gone. So it does take a little bit of luck. I am a believer that you make your luck. And I feel like this year there's a good chance, just because of the numbers, the odds would be better that we can acquire a quarterback.
And there you have it, Lucas, an answer where you probably thought you weren't going to get one. Tom wants to know your thoughts on becoming a 3-4. I don't think there's any thought to becoming a 3-4, is there?
No, we're a 4-3 team by personnel. Some teams are 3-4 teams by personnel, and they'll do some 4-3 stuff depending on the personnel matchup. And so there's, again, the 4-3 teams that'll do some 3-4 stuff to create some pressure. But in the end, I think there was 15 teams that played the 3-4 defense in the NFL this year. I think regardless of the scheme, it's the players within the scheme that make the difference. You can go back through all the Super Bowls, all the great defenses. The teams that played 4-3s had great players when they won it all or had the premier defense, and same thing with the 3-4. And the two teams in the Super Bowl this year were 3-4 teams.
All right, we turn it back over to the Don Pardo of Jaguars Radio.
Well, thank you very much, Brian Sexton. And a quick hello once again, and thanks for joining us to all our season ticket holders. Once again, you want to get a question in, just dial *3. It's just that easy. Also, a quick hello to our friends on Facebook and on Twitter who are able to listen in on Jaguars.com to this fan forum. Now, of course, if you'd like to ask a question, well, you guys, how about getting yourself some season tickets? Then you'll be able to do just that, because we do things like this for our season ticket holders all the time. Also, want to remind you, The deadline to renew season tickets for the 2011 season and to qualify for the renewal sweepstakes, this is pretty good, gang. Check this out. It gives you a chance to win a trip to a road game, possibly a pregame visit to the sidelines. That deadline is next Friday, 1 week from tomorrow. Season ticket owners who have not yet renewed can do so by hitting star zero right now or visit jaguars.com/myaccount. Now, if you hit star zero and you're put in touch with our representatives, just stay on the line. When you're done with them, they'll put you right back into the form. Also, I want to let you know the Jaguars have just announced a significant reduction on the price of club seats in six sections of the East Touchdown Club. This is good news. Fans can now purchase or upgrade to club seats in the East Touchdown Club or as close to the 50-yard line as you can possibly get for as little as $132.50 per game. Now, if you want to upgrade your seats to the East Club, just hit star zero, or if you want, just call the ticket office, 904-633-2000. Mr. Sexton.
Back to us.
Yeah.
All right. So we just roll right along. We've got the Jaguars general manager, Gene Smith, with us this evening, taking your question. Star three, get it in there. We were talking about a 3-4 defense in a 4-3. When you talk about the Jaguars, and I speak of the national media right now in particular, they focus on your two young guys inside, Terrence Knighton and Tyson Alualu. And that seems to be an area that people recognize as a strength. How well did they play last season for you, and how well did they play together? Did they mesh the way that you thought they might?
I thought they played well the first three quarters of the season. The last quarter of the season probably wasn't as productive. And I would say this, going back to the 3-4 question, I think a lot of people see Terrence as a guy who could be a true nose tackle. And in our scheme, he's a one technique, so he's kind of like that, where Tyson's the three. And I think the questions on the 3-4 come up, too, is Mel Tucker's background. You know, he did that up in Cleveland. We experimented with it a couple years ago. But I want to go back to the fact, you know, we're acquiring players to a 4-3. So every team is multiple in what they do scheme-wise, but by personnel, we're 4-3.
All right, folks, star 3 to get your question in. Andrea, how can we become more unpredictable? Good question. I don't know what side of the ball she's focusing on, but unpredictability is something that's very important for an NFL team.
No question. I think if on offense you're 50-50 run pass, I think that's a good place to be. You want to be close to that, I think. Now, I'm not the offensive coordinator, so that'd be a better question for Dirk, but I certainly can give you my football opinion.
And what was this team last year, 55-45?
I don't know the exact percentage. Again, that would be a Dirk question. But I can say this, like defensively, you'll have a different personality. I mean, Mel Tucker will certainly do some things differently than Jack did. I mean, that's what happens when you have an opportunity maybe to put your own thumbprint on the defense, and that's what Mel has the opportunity to do this year.
All right, Donald wants to know, well, we go back to a question that's probably suited for Dirk Cutter, but can we see more passing this year? As if we don't see enough of it in the National Football League these days anyway.
Well, I think as we grow as an offense, and certainly with Jarrett Dillard coming back, and then Jason Hill getting more involved, and we may be able to acquire a receiver in the draft. And Mike Thomas certainly, again, has shown some tremendous playmaking ability. And then Kasim Osgood did not play a lot down the stretch, but really improved as a receiver as the year went on. And so we have a group there, plus a couple tight ends, and utilizing our backs, you know, Maurice and Rashad Jennings, more getting the ball. I think Dirk has a lot of different weapons and ways to get the ball out on the perimeter. And I think you'll see more of that this year.
Joshua wants to know if Nnamdi Asamuga, fine corner from the Oakland Raiders, is on your radar. It would be a big signing. You're talking big money for that player now.
No question. He was one of the better paid players in the NFL. And he's a talented player. He played basically in a press man scheme there. Did not have a lot of, like, interceptions, and a lot of that had to do with when you play man, you're man turning, so your back's to the ball a lot. But he's a good player, and certainly we'll monitor his situation.
Is he on the same level as Darrell Revis, who I think most people would recognize as the top corner in the game?
I think Revis, Brian, is exactly what you said, the best corner in the game. When you take man, zone, run support, I mean, ball skills, I mean, he's got it all. You know, he was a great person, too. We had him in here for a visit before the draft, and we had a shot at him. I liked him as much as a person as I did as a player because he was a true competitor, and he had passion for his profession.
There was some talk coming out of New York when he opted out of his contract at the end there that they might try to get him. And, of course, New York's a big market, lots of money. But when you're talking about, you know, what Darrell Revis makes and now Asamuga, you'd love to pair two corners like that, man. But you just couldn't afford it in this game, could you?
Well, I mean, every team situation is different. It depends what type of team you have, what other marquee players you have under contract or certainly want to keep under contract. Again, Revis, I think, is a special player and arguably the best corner in the league.
All right, Greg wants to know your thought and how you handle players who were suspended during their college career, guys who had gotten in trouble. Do they automatically come off your board, or do you evaluate their situation?
We evaluate it case by case. I think you look at patterns of behavior, just like you look at patterns of performance. I think history is the greatest predictor of future success. As a player, as a person, and it certainly starts with the player. And so what we try to do is, when did this incident occur? Did it occur earlier in the player's career? Is there multiple incidents? I mean, there's things you got to take into consideration, but I think you go case by case, and I do think you have to take some calculated risk, weighing the risk versus the reward. But It starts with talent, and I do understand that, you know, we have to take calculated risks, so I'll deal with it accordingly.
All right, star 3, folks, if you've got a question, star 3, and we've got Frank, who wants to know, who is a part of your process as you put your board together?
Well, it's a very intensified process. The guy that I invest the most time with is Terry McDonough. I mean, the two of us in April, you know, I'm around him more than, you know, Deb, my wife. And I can tell you I'd probably rather be around Deb more because we're locked in a room together, the two of us, studying a lot of film. And as enjoyable as that is, Terry's not as good looking as my wife.
Yeah, I hope she's on the line right now. Hope she's on the line right now. But then you've also got a huge staff of scouts, and they are all part of the process, aren't they?
No question. But there's a narrowing down, so we're continuing our process of evaluation and acquiring information all the way up to draft day. But when you say, when we get right down to it, it comes basically through us, and then ultimately I have to make a final decision. And certainly we have the coach's opinion, the scout's opinion, so it's a tremendous process.
Jason wants to know about quarterback Andy Dalton from TCU, who was very impressive last year, has been over his entire career. Thoughts on him?
Yeah, I thought he did a good job. You asked about Christian Ponder earlier. You know, at the Senior Bowl, at the Combine, they both have the right type of character. I really think with quarterbacks, the one thing to me that's very defining, because you get a lot of different skill sets, you know, that end up having success in the NFL. I mean, you got guys that are maybe 6 foot, and you got guys that are 6'5". You got guys with bigger arms, some guys with a little lesser arms, some more mobile, some not so mobile. But in the end, all the great ones have a will to prepare. So I think that's the key at that position, is getting someone that has the will to prepare, the guy that sets the example for others to follow. And I really think your team's going to be as tough as your quarterback.
How do you judge that will to prepare? I mean, obviously you do it on the field. How do you judge their willingness in a classroom? How do you judge their willingness in their off hours to be watching film? Is that interviewing coaches and teammates, or do you have this conversation with them? How do you evaluate that?
Well, you can do it a number of different ways. You know, it is support staff, not just the position coach, a coordinator, and the head coach. But we try to build a profile throughout his career, not a guy who just started doing it his senior year. So we feel like if we build this profile that is developing a history on how they prepare, it gives us a greater indication of what he's going to become once he gets to the NFL. But there is no substitute for the will to prepare at that position. It's just too much of a mental position not to have somebody with a great will to prepare.
Shaquille would like an update on Aaron Kampman.
You know, Aaron's ahead of schedule. You know, I think part of it is he's been through it before. He's been very fortunate because he's had, if you're going to have an ACL, he's had the type that can be surgically repaired well, and he's genetically very gifted in the fact that he's a good healer. He's a guy that probably overtrains, so you got to control him some that way. But again, like he was last year, he's ahead of schedule. But I don't want to get people too excited. There's going to be a process to getting him back out on the field, but he certainly has made tremendous strides.
Chris would like to know if there are particular general managers that you look up to, guys that you have modeled your career after.
Well, I think the two guys in the Super Bowl are good starts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kevin Colbert and Ted Thompson. Kevin I'm probably closer with because the Pittsburgh Steelers are a Blesto scouting combine team like we are. And, you know, I feel like they have the same philosophy in terms of draft development. I mean, if you look at those teams, I think the Steelers had eight rookies on their team. The Packers had nine. The Packers, I believe, started three rookies on offense in the Super Bowl. The Packers, I think, had 15 players on IR. The Steelers had five. It's amazing what Mike did with that football team up in Green Bay. Well, both Mikes. But up in Green Bay, with all the injuries, they had to persevere through. And, you know, mid-season, you know, they were on him hard.
Yeah.
And he held it all together. And certainly their defense came alive. Their quarterback gave him a chance. And they found a way to win the Super Bowl. And I really commend Ted and Mike for what they did in Green Bay. Not to take anything away from Kevin and Mike in Pittsburgh, but, you know, those are two guys that I look to in some way, just because of the fact, you know, their philosophy for building a roster, building a Super Bowl champion, is what I believe.
Anybody stand out earlier in your career?
Sure. I liked Tom Donahoe. He was with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Certainly, I didn't know him very well, but I had a chance to have a conversation with him. George Young. Giants were, again, they're a Blesto team. And then, you know, Jack Butler, who was the director of Blesto for, I think, like 36 years. He was a player in the NFL for the Steelers. He actually was a player coach for a few years, I believe, at the end of his career. And then he was in player personnel, and he was a great person to pick his brain and to learn from.
I've heard from many old-timers in the NFL that Jack Butler is a guy whose impact on the National Football League has been so significant that he belongs in the Hall of Fame, or at least deserves Hall of Fame consideration. You share that thought?
I definitely do. And he was a great football player. I mean, the people in Pittsburgh know that. I don't know how many other people know that this day and age. But on top of it, he did some coaching in the NFL, and then he was a personnel guy that a lot of the things that he implemented from a Blesto scouting combine standpoint are still in play today.
Such as?
Well, some of the things that do with the measurements,
okay,
and some of the things that are timed at the combine. I think the big thing that he did was he developed a lot of scouts into professionals who became director of player personnel, general managers around the NFL. I mean, when I was in Blesto, working under Jack Butler, you know, there was Jerry Reese was working in Blesto as a scout.
The Giants general manager.
Tom Dimitroff.
The Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, and, of course, you know, I was in it at that time, and then there were other guys that had come through the system. You know, Kevin Colbert had come through
the system. So
he's got a tree. He
does. He's got a tree.
There's a tremendous amount of people in management positions around the league in player personnel that were former Blesto scouts.
If you love the game, folks, look up Jack Butler and understand his impact. Let's see, what else have we got here? Kenny has an interesting question, Gene. He says, you know, considering cap and pressure and trades, do you have a perfect spot to draft in the first round? I'm not sure what he means by pressure, but, you know, cost probably in terms of drafting in the top 10, it's become prohibitive in recent years. Is it, you know, is middle of the draft better than top of the draft, or, you know, is lower in the first round better? I mean, Bobby Bethard, for years, never wanted to draft a first-round pick. He wanted to trade out and get more picks. That was always his thing. Got a particular philosophy about the first round and where you like to be?
Well, I think it depends on it depends on the draft year. Some years, the first level of players is deeper than other years because within the first round, there's levels of talent. So I think it depends on the draft year. I mean, I like where we're at, and I like a lot of the players that are in the draft right around where we're at, but that doesn't mean we'll stay and pick. We may move if we can acquire more picks if our player's not there.
Clay wants to talk about Mercedes and a long-term deal for your Pro Bowl tight end. Obviously, you've got the franchise tag on there. Thoughts on getting a deal done as soon as a collective bargaining agreement is reached?
Well, we definitely want to do that. That's our goal here. He has done it right on and off the field. He's a guy who I think exemplifies what we want. When you talk about rewarding our own, we're going to get to a point, if we continue to draft and develop our players, and they do right on and off the field, that, you know, we'll be doing this hopefully on a regular basis. This is how we'll sustain success as a franchise. Like I said, we're going into pro free agency this year trying to upgrade our defense, but had we drafted better, we would be rewarding our own, maybe on the defensive side, with some guys that we could have extended early.
Real quick thought, you know, speaking along those lines, Scott wants to know about Mike Sims-Walker and the decision to let his contract expire.
Well, I think it's a situation where Jason Hill, we see more speed and quickness, and they were both comparable in the draft where they were slotted. We like Jason Hill. Jason Hill was one of, I think, six receivers when there was a receiver run there up to Mike Sims-Walker. And then we like the emergence, certainly, of Mike Thomas this year. And then Jarrett Dillard's coming back. We feel like with what we're doing on offense and what we can address potentially in the draft, that we'll have a better capability on the outside with the group we have to win.
All right, Joe, why don't you step in here and remind folks?
I can do it, yeah. If you want to talk with Gene and Brian, just hit *3 on your phone, *3. By the way, there's only about a little under 15 minutes left on the show. If you don't get a question in, just stay on the line after the show, and they will take your question and pass things on. So, you know, don't feel like if the show is over, you won't get your question. And just hang on the line, and we'll take real good care of you. Also, the Jaguars have just launched a competition that gives you fans a chance to appear on the 2011 General Bowl season tickets. To check out all the details and to enter the competition, just visit Jaguars.com. And if you'd like to, of course, get some rewards for helping grow the Jaguars right here in Jacksonville, well, Team Teal is looking for you. Just visit MyTeamTeal.com. That's MyTeamTeal.com for more information on becoming a part of Team Teal. Of course, if you ever want to speak to a representative about renewing your season tickets, adding seats, upgrading seats, or any other questions, just hit *0 right now. You'll be put in touch with a ticket representative, and then down the line, they'll put you right back in the queue, and you won't miss a beat of the show.
All right, we'll go about 10 more minutes with Jaguars general manager Gene Smith. A few more questions. We're talking about Mike Sims-Walker, the emergence of Jason Hill, and Mike Thomas. Alicia wants to know if receiver is on your needs list for the draft coming up in April.
I would certainly look at a receiver in the draft. I do think we need to add another player there. We have some guys that could emerge that I haven't mentioned tonight that have certainly shown the ability to run and make plays in practice. They just haven't transferred it to the game.
Tyquan Underwood.
That's correct. I think the other thing, too, is when you look at any player, you know, I always say availability supersedes ability. Some guys just have bad luck. They can't stay healthy enough to help you win on a consistent basis. So I feel like football is a contact sport, and, you know, durability is key. Certainly it starts with talent, but you got to be out on the field performing to help your team win.
I think that brings us to a significant issue. How about Maurice Jones-Drew and his durability? He has always shown it. End of the year, he got banged up. He is a powerful runner. I don't know if it's accurate to say he's an Earl Campbell contact kind of runner because he's not as big as Earl Campbell, but he delivers a blow. Do you worry about the long-term durability of a running back from year five on? Is Maurice fall into that category of, yeah, you know, his style means you really have to consider how you use him?
Right. Up until this year, when he had the issue with his knee, he's been a durable player. I think his style is such that he's a linebacker playing running back.
He delivers the blow.
Right. And so that probably lends itself to, you know, more injuries. I think the one thing that we have to do is Rashad Jennings just needs to get more touches to help him out. I think the good teams in the NFL, you know, have a feature back, which is what Maurice is, and then a companion back, which is what Rashad Jennings is. And so I feel like that's the area we can really help him. But I don't think he's ever going to change what got him to this level. I mean, that's his style. You know, Bob Sanders is someone that people would say his style of play has affected his ability to stay healthy, and that's probably true. But, you know, to get to this level, the competitor that he is what made him overcome maybe a lot of other deficiencies.
You know, along those lines, and we're both cautiously optimistic that a deal gets done tomorrow night, what about some of these guys and their rehabilitation as you go forward if there isn't an agreement tomorrow night? You really can't monitor that, can you? You have to hope that guys like Campman and Drew and anyone else are as motivated off the field as they always are on it.
Well, again, I think when you have character on your football team, I don't think it's any different than if you have character in your classroom, you have character in your work environment. I don't care where it is. I think people are going to do the things necessary to maximize their talent. So if it's taking care of their body, doing the proper rehab, lifting, whatever it is, I feel like, you know, our players, that's an area that they'll be strong in.
A couple more minutes for questions with Jaguars General Manager Gene Smith, and we certainly appreciate having you with us this evening on this conference call. Jay wants to know your thoughts on Derek Harvey and what he can do to achieve his potential in 2011.
Well, I don't like to use the word potential unless it's weight potential.
Okay, I didn't know that.
In player personnel, there's a saying that, you know, potential will get you fired and performance will keep you hired. So I think that applies with, you know, everyone in the National Football League. You talk about players, coaches, scouts in particular. You better be performers. And, you know, in terms of Derek Harvey, you know, he came out of the out-of-season program in OTA strong. He got into the preseason. He kind of leveled off. And, you know, we had some young players emerge and get play time, and I think they earned the opportunity to get those snaps. And he's got to fight his way back. He had shown some very encouraging things, but he was not able to sustain it. And that's what the NFL is all about, is being able to sustain a level of performance to help your team win every Sunday. And he was unable to do that this year.
Who on the roster right now has the potential to deliver that pass rush off the edge that you were looking for, besides the obvious Aaron Campman? Is there any of those young guys that you just referred to that can give you the kind of punch you're looking for from that position?
Well, I think another year in the system and adjusting to the NFL, I think two guys have a chance in our sub situations, Larry Hart and Aaron Morgan.
Right.
Both those guys are fast and quick and play low to the ground. I think in college sometimes you can win with speed. You get the NFL, and it's not that easy. They find out that the left tackle is actually a skilled position.
Yeah.
And so I feel like those two guys will be able to create more rush. And then I do feel like the defensive end spot is an area that could be addressed again in the draft.
There's a question about a defensive end from Purdue, Ryan Kerrigan. And Ryan wants to know your thoughts on him.
He's a good player. He's one of a number of defensive linemen that have a chance to go in the first round. It's going to be heavy in the first round with offensive and defensive linemen. So he's certainly got a lot of the things that you look for in an every down player.
He and the kid from Missouri, Alden Smith, right?
Yes.
They are, and then the kid from Iowa. They always come up when you start talking about these guys.
Yeah, Iowa's actually got three defensive linemen in their senior group, but Claiborne's the best one.
All right. We move along. How is the draft for middle linebacker? Mike wants to know.
There are some linebackers in the draft at the Sam, Mike, and Will position. It's not a deep area, but certainly again, if you got a linebacker there that is your best available player, I mean, regardless of what we did in pro free agency, we'd still add another linebacker.
As we start to come to the close of our conference call here, what percent, if it's not proprietary, of your board is complete and set in stone? Or does that not happen until the night before the draft?
Well, in terms of playability, it was fairly close before the combine. But certainly with these underclassmen, we need to know more about them. And then our coaches are doing some work. So it wasn't done before the combine, but the foundation was certainly laid. And as we go down the stretch, it's just a narrowing down process. Like I said, until you're a part of it, you really can't respect what all goes into it.
There's so much information that you all have access to, and then, of course, you go out and you utilize in your evaluation. Maybe the greatest draft of all time was the 1974 draft by the Steelers that produced those Hall of Famers. They didn't have the resources to the information that you do now. Any thought that maybe there's too much information, that you can have a deluge of information and paralysis by analysis in this process, or is, in your estimation, more information better?
Well, I don't mind getting more information, as long as it's accurate information. There's so much out there now because of the internet that you got to follow up on. You got to put a lot of fires out right before the draft. So the information gathering part of it, that's kind of who we are, you know, evaluation and information. It's just making sure that we're getting the accurate information as we get closer to draft day. That's the key.
All right, one final thought, and then we'll wrap things up. Damon wants to know about Deji Kareem's role.
Well, hopefully it's an increased role because he is a home run hitter. He's a guy that has the ability to take the ball into the end zone from any part of the field. I feel like he can be that specialty halfback, that third halfback, draw, screen, type, and then certainly on kickoff returns, he's got a chance to continue to be explosive back there. I want to see him score one, like 80 yards, because I think that would give him some juice and some excitement, because he didn't have the opportunity necessarily to hit one this year, but I feel like next year he will.
But I think he set up the game winner against the Raiders.
He did, and the nice thing about it is we have a chance with Scotty McGee coming back. I know Mike Thomas did our punt returns, but Scotty certainly could.
We saw that in the preseason.
Right, as Mike gets used more as a receiver. But you could have, on your kickoff return unit, two guys back that are 4-3. You could have Deji and you could have Scotty, and no one could kick away from a guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you'd have that much more ability to hit home runs on your returns.
Well, we have whet the appetite of every Jaguars fan who is on this call this evening. We can only hope that there's an agreement. We have football on time because the draft is still a couple of weeks away, and people are eager for it. So, Gene, thanks for your time tonight. Certainly appreciate it.
It's no problem at all. And, again, I want to thank everybody for listening. Hopefully I've given them some insight that's a little bit different and what they acquire from other media outlets. I'm certainly sensitive to our season ticket holders, and I appreciate their support.
Thanks, Gene. We appreciate it. And thanks to all of you for joining us this evening. There'll be more of these. Just keep your ear to the ground, folks. Watch that email.